This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
This is Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast, a RetroZap podcast network exclusive. Hello, everyone. On this episode of Warp Trails, we are discussing Choose Your Pain, the fifth episode of the season. I am Dennis Keithley, and joining me is my wife and co-host Beth.
Hello.
This episode marks the return of a classic Star Trek character, Harry Mudd. Before we dive into our review, Beth, can you tell us a bit about Harry Mudd?
I can. Harcourt Fenton Mudd was he appeared in two episodes of the original series. He's something of a con man, sort of more of a lovable rogue than an actual villain. Although, as I describe the episodes to you briefly, it's going to be kind of not delightful. In one episode of the original series called Mudd's Women, he interacts with the Enterprise as he's trying to sell wives to some miners, and it goes poorly. And then he's probably more famous for the I, Mudd episode, in which the Enterprise discovers him on a planet. It's known for lines. Basically, the crew of the Enterprise has to be illogical in order to break down the androids, and it's probably known for Kirk's "The Enterprise is a beautiful lady, and we love her."
And then, if I remember correctly, there was a reference to Mudd in Into Darkness, wasn't there?
There was. They were going to use the ship from the Mudd incident.
That's right, and they took that to the Klingon moon in order to find Khan.
Yes, and my understanding is he also showed up in the animated series, but I've never seen the animated series, so I cannot intelligently speak to that.
All right.
But he's well modernized in this show. I mean, he's snarky, he's self-centered. I think he's more charming in the original series, but that, I think, is more of an element of being in the 60s than it was actually Mudd's character, if
okay.
That makes any sense.
Well, let's get into our episode discussion then. Everything starts off with Burnham having a dream of herself in the Ripper's place. She screams as the Discovery goes to black alert and engages the spore drive. She wakes up from that in a cold sweat. We then next see her discussing the degradation of the Ripper, which they're calling a tardigrade.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I caught that on the previous episode.
They mentioned it briefly that it was similar to the tardigrade, so yes, they did, but they mostly called it the Ripper during the episode.
Right. But she's having this conversation with Dr. Culver, and he agrees to run some tests out of concern for the well-being of this creature. Meanwhile, Captain Lorcan has been summoned to a Starfleet meeting. While there, he discusses Discovery's missions with the top brass.
Mm-hmm.
Starfleet is making new ships with spore drives based on the success of the Discovery, but they need more tardigrades. And so Discovery is ordered to find them to the extent they can. In the meantime, they order the Discovery to lay low because they are risking the Klingons figuring out that Discovery is Starfleet's secret weapon.
And I think this once again goes to a bit of the warping with the idea of Starfleet being at war. The Doctor, Dr. Culver, seems to have no problems with the idea that the tardigrade might be uncomfortable, might be in danger. But then the Admiral says they basically got every ship looking for these creatures and they'll find them eventually, which suggests that no one in the Starfleet Admiralty is looking to see if this is something they ought to be doing, which I wasn't a big fan of.
Sure, they're more concerned about winning the war right now than they are with scientific discovery.
Well, or
fair
just
enough.
Even, yeah, but even like, is this a creature that we should be using in this way?
Oh, no doubt about it. The scene shifts to Tilly and Burnham having lunch. Tilly is trying to get Burnham to open up, and Burnham is very resistant. And she essentially admits to being distracted, that she's got these concerns for the tardigrade. I don't know. What did you make anything more out of this scene other than it's Tilly's ongoing attempts to be more socially acceptable and develop a relationship with her roommate?
Not Not really. I mean, I thought that it was something of a throwaway line about how Burnham now has time to process her emotions, which is probably something she's never really had. I found that interesting, and it might be something that they're setting up for episodes. But no, I think that was supposed to be a bit of just sort of friendships being delivered. We haven't had a lot of relationship building before this, and we have quite a bit of it in this episode, and I think that's just one of the first examples.
Mm-hmm. The scene returns to this starbase. Lorca is treating his eyes. He's got this extreme photosensitivity that he experienced as a battle wound at some point. And Admiral Cornwell walks in on him while he's doing that and exposes him some light, which he reacts poorly to. And she brings up this conscription issue concerning Burnham. She acknowledges that Lorca has the right to conscript Burnham under, I can't remember what the code was that they cited, but questions whether it was a good idea.
Right. It was a poor PR choice to take the first mutineer and put her to work on your ship, which wins the no duh award of the episode.
I agree. I'm beginning to think that this term first mutineer does not mean the first person to ever mutiny on a Starfleet vessel as much as it is the first mutineer of this war. What's your take on that?
There does seem to be more of something to it. I don't know if it's just the first successful, well, it wasn't really successful, or the first person who, I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, the reason why I think this is because the first mutineers being looked at as responsible for the war. If that's all it was, then would anyone care? But anyway, it's something to think about later, I suppose. So Lorca heads back to Discovery, but he doesn't make it. While he's en route, right, the Klingons attack Lorca's shuttle. His pilot is quickly overwhelmed and killed, and he is taken prisoner. Furthermore, his eye treatment, that device he was using, is left behind.
Yes, and the Klingons knew him, knew he would be there, knew him by name, and took him.
So do we think there's a traitor, maybe, in Starfleet?
Yes, I'm sure there is one. I'm not entirely sure we were supposed to know it based on that, but yes, I am sure there will be at some point a traitor in Starfleet.
Yeah, I just find it curious that they were able to pick him off so easily. I didn't get the idea that they were in Klingon space. Now, I know they're at war, so they're interfering with each other's space, but...
Yeah, we don't really know where exactly that meeting took place.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been closer to the front than at least I was led to believe.
So on the Discovery, Admiral Cornwell now informs Saru that he is in command. He begins to issue orders to the crew concerning the rescue of Lorca, and they begin anticipating where he might be, and they're searching various systems and flight routes in order to determine that. His threat ganglia emerge as Burnham arrives on the bridge. This is kind of an ongoing thing with Saru and Burnham. Is he afraid of her? Is he afraid of what she represents? That comes up again later in the episode.
Right.
But they then have a discussion, I guess, in the ready room about the tardigrades, where Burnham is expressing her concern that the spore drive is harming it, but she doesn't have any proof. And Saru wants proof, and absent that, he's only concerned with the mission. He's only concerned with rescuing Captain Lorca.
Yeah, well, I mean, he is the acting captain. He's been told to save the captain. This is an opportunity to prove himself, if not to Lorca, because he may have given up on that possibility, to at least somebody else in Starfleet. So, yeah, he's pretty focused on, you know, what would the top captains do? What would he do? Or what should he do? What would Lorca do? And what is being asked of him? I think what we're supposed to take from that is that he certainly doesn't trust himself, and he's trying to fake it till he can make it, basically, as an acting captain.
Right. And to that end, he accesses the logs from Starfleet and wants to know, I guess, who the top acting or former captains were. He gets an interesting list, which includes...
He does get an interesting list.
Captain Jonathan Archer from Enterprise. Captain Pike.
Yep.
And
he should be on the Enterprise right now.
Yeah, is the Enterprise in existence now, or is it still about 5 years away? And that's another throwaway.
I don't know, but they mentioned Jefferson, Iowa as where Starfleet was working, which is not where Kirk was born. He was born in, I think it's Riverside, Iowa. But it was a nice little Iowa call out for, you know, there's a lot for the hardcore, I don't want to call us super fans, but people who spent a lot of time in Star Trek in this episode.
Right. And so, yeah, this was a nice callback on some of those captains' names. But so he's setting up some program to help him determine whether he's doing a good job, because he he's experiencing a confidence issue there.
Yeah, he basically wants the computer to give him a report card.
Right. So Lorca awakens on a Klingon prison ship, and it is there that we get our first appearance of hardcore Brenton Mudd. As Lorca and Mudd talk, Mudd tells Lorca of his sad tale of woe, of how he ended up in this position.
Which is interesting, because we have met Stella. She was not his favorite person, so to have her talk about how Stella was the love of his life and, you know, outside his league and all that he had to go through to get her, to see how that relationship ends up is kind of sad, but kind of interesting. It was like, really? Really, Stella? Okay.
Have we heard this story before, or was this a brand new version of it?
It was new to me. In iMud, they had a robot made of Stella so that she could yell at him and he could tell her to be quiet and she would turn off.
Interesting. But as the story goes here, he was in love with her. He wanted to impress her. He took out a large loan to buy a moon. He got behind in the payments on the moon. He fled into space and ran right into the Klingons who captured him.
Let that be a lesson to you out there. Don't buy a moon to impress people, because you could get in wrong with your creditors.
All right. So here's where the title of the episode, Choose Your Pain, comes in. After they've had this discussion, the Klingons arrive and demand Mudd choose his pain. He points to the third member of their cell, who's lying unconscious in the corner, whereby the Klingons mercilessly beat the tar out of this guy. After they're done, he explains that the Klingons will show up and demand they choose their pain, and they can either take the beating themselves, or they can defer to someone else in their cell. And the whole point of this is to prohibit any camaraderie from developing amongst the cellmates and to break their spirits.
I'll give Wilson credit for how he presents Mudd in this scene. Mudd is pretty much a horrible person, but he's charming in how he speaks, and it was done that way. I mean, oh, here's the floor show. Or, you know, it was very matter of fact, but it was somewhat, it was lighthearted for something that was as awful as it was.
Yeah, I kind of have a problem with this whole thing. This does not seem like the honorable Klingons that we came to know in The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and other more recent iterations of Star Trek. This whole showing up, being the snot out of somebody that's essentially a defenseless prisoner. This just doesn't jive with what I've come to know of the Klingons. What do you think about that?
This whole ship was weird. It was, dare I say it, almost more Romulan, where a former spy was in charge of the ship. And the idea of, yeah, having these sort of psychological games on a prison ship. But then a prison ship as anything other than a transport device seemed interesting to me as well. Like, I don't really think of the Klingons as really holding people for a long period of time and torturing them in order to, like, float around space and have them be prisoners. But apparently, yeah, I'm wrong.
Very Tal Shiar. Back on the Discovery, Burnham, Culber, and Stamets are having a discussion about the tardigrade. They all agree that they need a new alternative. Interesting enough, Stamets reminds Burnham that it wasn't his idea to use the tardigrade in the first place. It was hers. She was the one that came up with the solution.
Which gives us the line of the evening from Burnham. She was swallowing the urge to set the record straight, which I will never be able to use in conversation, but I will try.
Mm-hmm. And so they all agree that they're going to see if they can't find some new alternative to get the spore drive to work without using the tardigrade. So that was a tight little scene. Moving back to the Klingon prison ship, we get to meet Lieutenant Ash Wilson. He has been a Klingon prisoner for 7 months, and he is eager to keep Lorca alive as he lost his previous captain in the early days of the war. He is so concerned about this that he immediately offers the food he has to Lorca, and he insists that he take it. And then Mudd's pet bug just pounces on it and steals it. So Mudd then takes this opportunity to lecture Lorca on Starfleet's arrogance. You know, they sit up there in their ships high above the world and look down upon the little guy. They don't even take them in consideration. Was there more to this that I was missing, or was just Mudd preaching for the sake of preaching?
It was a little bit of Mudd preaching for the sake of preaching. I certainly thought that this new lieutenant, like, it was just screaming, like, spy to me. Like, Lieutenant Wilson is not to be trusted, and I don't know if I'm just reading into things, but it just, I mean, even Lorca was like, come on, man. Where did you come
from? Yeah, he asked him, how have you survived this long for 7 months and in fairly good shape? And he says a couple things. He says, one, the captain of the vessel's taken a liking to him, which I feel like is a red flag.
Yes.
And second, he says that they let them rest from time to time to recover, so I guess they can beat them up more later.
Although, I don't think that that first Starfleet officer had gotten any time to rest, and I'm pretty sure he's not recovering right now.
Right, which is the second red flag of the situation. So, we'll get, I guess we'll see more of Lieutenant Ash Wilson later,
but Mudd's speech was throwbacks, right? That he said to boldly go where no man has gone before, which mm-hmm. is right from the original series. And then he says, this is where the frontier comes back, which is from one of the newer movies.
Beyond.
But it was pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think what they're trying to do is tie in the alternative viewpoints on Starfleet's mission and just present them.
Right. Well, the whole scene is brought to a quick close as Lorca is taken away by the Klingons. And then we return to the Discovery, where Stamets, Tilly, and Burnham are engaged in a fair amount of exposition, where they're discussing the mushrooms and how its root system expands throughout the universe to infinity. I admit, I got a little lost, and I haven't gone back to watch this scene, so I'm not exactly sure what they're talking about. But the tardigrade, then, it eats these mushrooms, and it undergoes some sort of a rapid horizontal gene transfer, where it can then basically go wherever it wants in the universe.
Yes.
They determined the spore drive has been successful because it needed an animate pilot, which was what the tardigrade was.
Yes.
And so in order to save the tardigrade, they need to find a substitute species.
A virtual ripper.
Yeah, a virtual ripper, which they're going to agree to. It seemed like a lot of technical jargon here, and this was mainly a scene that was needed for exposition's sake.
This is one of the few science and actually, like, explorer scenes we've gotten. I mean, I get what you're saying. It was a lot of exposition. Like, if you don't understand how this spore drive works, we're going to take 2 or 3 minutes and explain it to you. Which, actually, I kind of like. But the sort of, we need to find a willing co-pilot. Hey, we have a solution. Hey, this is awesome. And Tilly even, like, they, like, drop a couple F-bombs in the coolness. That was cool to me. I really liked that. I was like, yay, Star Trek! Star Trek
right.
has a little sign. I mean, does it slow down the episode? Yes, it slows down the episode, but mm-hmm. I understand the spore drive more than I did before.
Oh, certainly. I don't get the spores and this idea, but I get how it works. I get the explanation. I just don't get the spores themselves. But what did you think of the language in this episode? They did drop a couple of F-bombs, which I was not expecting at all.
I didn't mind it. I mean, it fit. I mean, I probably would have not minded at all if our 9-year-old hadn't been in the room, but I'm sure he's heard that word before, but... It didn't bother me. And Tilly, it seems so in character with Tilly.
I guess it just didn't seem necessary to me. The lines were fine and humorous, but regardless. We return to Lorca. He's now in the torture chamber on the
yes.
Klingon vessel. And I guess this was Laurel. It looked like her, who was in charge of the ship.
I don't know. I don't think it's supposed to be her, is it?
I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be Laurel or not. It looked kind of like her. But, which... maybe helps explain why they knew where they're going to be, but I couldn't tell. I would seem weird if it was her, but she seems to know an awful lot about Lorca, is trying to interrogate him and knows that he's got this light sensitivity issue.
Which seems like a weird thing to know about him.
Right. And so she pries his eyes open and tortures
Orange style.
Right. Tortures him with extremely bright light.
Which reminded me of the episode of Next Generation, where Picard gets captured and tortured, and he has to say there are fewer lights. You know, there are 4 lights. How many lights are there? When he was captured by the Cardassians. I don't know that there were 4 lights, but it made me... That's what I thought of.
Back on the Discovery, the crews figured out the Klingons must be taking Lorca through the Mimpa system. When they are about to engage the spore drive, they discover Stamets has taken it offline, which infuriates Suru.
Yes.
So he marches down to the lab, and he's quite angry. Burnham attempts to reason with him and says that humans have some similar DNA. It might work, but it's going to take some testing. It's going to take some time. So it reminds them they don't have time. Their mission is to rescue the captain. Therefore, get the Terrigrade, get the spore drive back online, and that's the order. In the meantime, Suru makes it personal.
He makes it real personal.
Burnham, and says that, it basically says, this is why you're dangerous. This is why Captain Georgiou got killed, which
right.
is really beneath the belt.
Yeah, it's just you're doing it again.
Mm-hmm. And so he confines Burnham to her quarters, and again, they get the drive online, and we'll find out shortly that it works. But they keep going back and forth, not I want to say rapidly, but quickly between what's going on with the Klingons and Lorca and what's going on Discovery. We go back to the Klingon ship, and Lorca is being returned to his cell. He figured out that Mud was a spy because he found a bug on Mud's bug, so to speak.
Yes.
A listening device there, which he quickly destroys and then throws the bug against the wall. Mud then brings out something about Lorca's last command. I guess the full story we hadn't heard before, but Lorca was the only survivor. What was the name of the ship? The Boron?
The Boron. That's what I wrote down. The USS Boron.
Right. And so he was trying to tweak Lorca by saying, you know, oh, you don't abide by the ideals of going down with the ship. To which Lorca says, well, you don't know the whole story. It's true I was the only survivor, but I blew up the ship because they were about to be captured by the Klingons, and I wasn't going to let them be taken to Kronos and tortured.
Yeah, that's what he says. I have many, many questions, but...
Well, let me ask you. Let's take him at his word there. On our last episode, you mentioned how you weren't a big fan of the captain.
Yeah.
If this is true, what do you think of him?
If this is true, the vision that I have, whether it's accurate with the script, is that he got in a shuttlecraft or a escape pod, basically blasted himself off, and then blew up his own ship with everybody else on it.
That's not the vision I have at all. I suspect it'd be something a little bit more heroic than that. But
it's still... So, okay, if he stayed on the ship and blew it up and somehow managed to survive, it's horrible, but we give him credit for assuming that he thought everybody was going to go. A.K.A. the first, you know, the second episode.
You took this a direction I wasn't expecting. I was mainly looking at it from the angle of he sacrifice his crew rather than let them get tortured and suffer a fate that would be worse than just getting killed, which I kind of respect in that regard. That'd be a monstrous thing to have to do and then live with, yet he did it for the betterment of his crew. I suspect you're right that there's more to it than that, but it was an interesting character moment that I think our conversation just revealed could go a couple different ways.
It could go a couple, and maybe it's, I refuse to give him the benefit of any doubt at the moment, but it just had this like, did you get the photosensitivity issue watching your ship blow up? Because that's not cool.
Yeah, I suspect we'll be learning more about this in upcoming episodes. So the Discovery goes to Black Alert, they engage the spore drive, they're successful, they end up in Klingon space, and the tardigrade goes into cryptobiosis, which is going to be a real problem.
Because they're in Klingon space.
And they have no other way out unless they can figure out a solution to this problem. They're essentially, Saru orders them to figure this out, rehydrate the creature. I don't know, Saru is not impressing me here.
This was really interesting. I am used to the idea on Star Trek that the bridge knows everything that's going on in the ship and the sort of below decks know nothing. In this episode where they have Ripper is being basically tortured and everyone on the bridge is so excited that it's working was really an interesting flip of that, which this show has done several times, taken like very traditional Star Trek things and turned them a 180 and given them a different spin. I haven't always liked how they've done that spin, but this time I really did. I mean, I hated watching the Ripper get hurt, but to see the bridge be like, yay, this is awesome, and it was like, guys, if you knew what was happening downstairs, you would not be happy.
Right. I guess the problem I have with this is that I was under the impression that Saru was more scientifically inclined, and this notion that you can just rehydrate the creature and do it again just doesn't seem to be in character. Now, I will say this, he is acting as the captain, and the captain's job is to get the mission done. And to that end, he's doing exactly what he needs to do, which is, you know, let's get the spore drive working, let's rescue the captain, let's get out of here, mission successful, and we'll figure out saving this creature later. It's, you know,
So you thought this was genuine. I mean, he says the words. Saru says the words. There's no doubt about it. But you thought this was genuine, as opposed to him trying to force himself to do well by the computer protocol of a good captain.
I think he's frustrated, and I think he's doing the best he can. I don't think the computer protocol was on the back of his mind at the moment. He was faced with a crisis, and he needed to solve the crisis.
See, I think he's acting, how would a captain handle this situation? I am untrained, I don't know how to do it, and how should I do this?
I'm not sure there's a difference between our two positions, really. I think it's he's got a mission to do. That's what a captain would do. Could complete the mission. Be it as it may, he's very angry. This entire mission is putting a lot of stress on him. He is... if anything, proving that he may be not quite ready for the captaincy, but that'll come up in a conversation with him and Burnham in just a bit.
Yeah.
Lorca is forced to choose his pain when the Klingons return to the cell. He's about to choose Mud, but Lieutenant Tyler volunteers. Tyler and Lorca get the drop on the Klingons and escape from their cell after...
lots of Star Trek fighting.
Yeah, but this was more impressive than what Kirk ever did.
Well, this is, but the two-handed punch?
Yeah, the two-handed chop. Yeah. Right? But then snapping the Klingon's neck.
Oh, I mean, no. It was fierce, and mm-hmm. I want the Klingon gun that Lorca has, which is like part knife, part phaser thing.
Got a disruptor.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so they make it out of their cell. Mud is very surprised, says Tyler's like, what? You can get out here? What is this? He's flabbergasted. And Tyler says, it's a two-man job, and I was waiting for the right man to show up. I don't know. This is raising more flags for me. I hope I'm wrong.
No, I would like to be wrong because I really like the character, but every time he's on the screen, I'm like, don't trust him.
So they get out, and they are trying to make their way to...
You should mention they leave Mud behind.
They leave Mud behind, and they get out, and they are trying to make their way to the docking bay. Tyler is injured to the point that he kind of demands to be left behind because he's holding Lorca back. So Lorca reluctantly agrees and kind of stashes him in a doorway. While Lorca's gone, the captain of the ship shows up and says something to the effect of, like, after everything...
You can't leave me. It was very, like, Pink, please don't leave me.
And so they engage in a fight.
And he, again, red flag. From the point of somebody who's been abused getting vengeance on their abuser, there was a sense of victory in that scene. The fact that 30 seconds ago he couldn't walk or move his arm but could somehow just beat the poop out of a Klingon seemed a little odd to me.
Lorca shows back up having found the docking bay and managed to shoot this captain in the face. Now, it was interesting that she didn't disintegrate like everyone else they shot with these disruptors, but... it did the trick, because she's lying on the deck of the ship just screaming. So they make their getaway, and they've found a raider in the docking bay, and they're fleeing with other raiders in pursuit. They find the Discovery in the distance, and they start heading towards it. Suru, from the bridge of the Discovery, sees them coming, analyzes the flight pattern of all these raiders, and determines that must be Lorca on the front one, because it's evading
The following vessels are acting as a pack of predators, and the one in the front is acting basically as the prey. I thought that was really interesting. I mean, that was a good bit of writing to show how he would see that and how he would process that based on his upbringing.
Yeah, so they hail the raider that Lorca's on, confirms them, beam them aboard. They're successful. Suru then comms Stamets and asks if the spore drive is ready, and he does say it's ready.
We are ready to jump.
Ready to jump. And so they engage the spore drive, and they get away.
Yep.
Only to find that Stamets has replaced the pterograde with himself.
Well, we knew somebody had to. When as soon as he said that answer that we were ready to jump and didn't say anything about the Ripper being ready, so he didn't directly answer the question, we knew somebody else was in there.
Right. After some tense moments where I wasn't certain that he survived, he wakes up and he's laughing hysterically because it worked. Yay to that. Suru arrives in Burnham's quarters and informs her that they've rescued the captain. Mm-hmm. He then confesses that he was not afraid of Burnham, but he's very angry with her and extremely jealous.
Yeah.
He's never gotten over the chance that Burnham got to have all the experiences with Georgiou at her side that he wanted. He wanted that training. He assumed that Burnham at some point would get a command of her own, and then Suru would move up into that first officer's role.
And I think that was a fair assumption.
It was, but that's all... not possible now.
Right.
Burnham attempts to bridge this gap by giving him Georgiou's telescope, which was surprising. A nice gesture, I guess. I mean, maybe it's the Vulcan part of her this, doing something more logical.
She was never going to... I mean, it had so much guilt for her that she wanted to pass it on to somebody who wouldn't look at it and feel bad every time they looked at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then Suru takes her concerns... to heart and orders her to help the tardigrade. So she does that. Her and Tilly then go to the lab. They provide the tardigrade with some spores, eject it in space, whereby it recovers. And I'm not sure what you would call the action. I don't think it's warp, but it then speeds out of the system.
I don't know what it does.
It finds the
goes on the network.
Spore system and is out of there.
And that's going to go over really well.
Mm-hmm. We then have a final scene between Culber and Stamets. It turns out that they are a couple.
Yes.
Culber is still examining Stamets. I guess they're in the bathroom brushing their teeth and getting ready for bed.
End of day domestic events.
Right. And so it was, you know, interesting.
What do you think of the toothbrushes? They were not Sonic Hairs.
I didn't actually notice them.
They didn't have any bristles on them either, though. I'm interested in this toothbrush.
Hmm. That could be interesting. So they have a touching conversation. Culber leaves and Stamets turns to follow him. And once he does, we get the view of his mirror and he's still standing there.
In the mirror.
In the mirror.
Yeah. I mean, you knew this wasn't 100% solved.
Yeah, well, there's going to be consequences.
You knew it wasn't 100% solved. It was, and I'm glad they had that touching moment between the two. I mean, it was just a good moment. Like, it seemed real to me. Like, you've never been in mortal danger or put yourself in mortal danger. And thank you for that. But I could see the sort of like, well, I was doing it to protect you. Okay, great. Well, thanks. Don't.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of moment that seemed really real to me. But the whole time I was like, oh no, oh no.
Right. You know, we were just waiting for something to happen there.
Yeah.
And that's it for the episode. So overall, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought the modernization was Mud was interesting. He's still a total sleazeball and yet manages to be somewhat charming.
He's going to be back.
Oh, of course he's going to be back. You don't get somebody like that to play well, and have him not come back. And he has sworn vengeance on, and he will probably get it.
Yeah, it was interesting to see him. I don't remember the episodes from the original series with him all that well. It seemed weird you would have him in just for the screen time he got. There was an interesting backstory to Lorca we learned courtesy of him. But other than that.
Well, then I'm not clear how he knew that. There's right. A lot of stuff with Mud that is interesting. He actually gets the second line of the night, which is, you know, that confession is good for the soul. It's too bad that none of us have one.
Right. That was a good line.
That was a good line.
So, yeah, overall, I like the episode. I'm a little concerned about the Klingons and their portrayal in the series after this.
It's uneven.
Right. And, you know, just getting away from some of the honor things, and they're a little bit more... Some of their actions, like, you know, barbaric when we found out that they ate Captain Georgiou in the last episode.
And sometimes their strength is, like, indestructible, and sometimes it's really easy to beat them. I mean, we all knew Lorca was going to escape, right, gang? We all knew that. But he's, like, walking down the hallway, and it was like, I'm going to leap out now. Oh, hello, angry Klingon. I'm going to shoot you. And it's like, okay. And then, you know, like, 5 feet later, another Klingon jumps out from the save. It's like, come on.
Well, I like Lorca a lot more from this episode. I really liked his abilities. I liked his development as a character in this episode. But so I'm looking forward to next week. But that is going to conclude our discussion of episode 5, Choose Your Pain. Beth, how can anyone listening find us on the internet?
Well, we can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails. We are on Instagram as at Warp Trails Pod. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/Warp Trails Pod. And we can be reached by email at warptrails@retrozap.com.
Yep, and we're actually doing stuff on our Facebook page now, so it's not just Twitter anymore. And our show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. Head over there to find other great podcasts such as Brews and Blasters, The Newscast Movie Show, Skywalking Through Neverland, Animaniacs, Dorklair, The Sandcrawler, Beltway Banthas, Ardcast, Scarlet Velocity, Green Justice, Case Files, Terrigen Dreams, and my other podcast, Starship, Sabers, and Scoundrels. Our theme music is Wasp from Faces by Misha Dixon, which is available on the Free Music Archive. So, thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper, and we'll be back next week with our review of Episode 6, Leth.
Good night! Thank you.